Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. Tonight's author on tour is Rick Riley, who reads from and discusses his hilarious new book, Shanks for Nothing, published by Doubleday. In the weeks to come, we have Nando Parado, Augustine Burroughs, Madeline Albright, Elizabeth Strout, Elizabeth Berg, and many more. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, good evening. Good evening. On behalf of the Tattered Cover Bookstore, it's my pleasure to welcome you and to thank you for your support. Rick Riley began his career in 1979, taking phoned-in high school volleyball scores for the Boulder Daily Camera while he was a sophomore at the University of Colorado. He wrote for 2 years at the Camera, two more at the Denver Post, and two more at the Los Angeles Times before moving to Sports Illustrated in 1985. Rick is currently a senior writer for Sports Illustrated, and his Life of Riley column is the first signed weekly opinion column in the magazine's 50-year history. He's won many awards in his journalism career and has been voted National Sports Writer of the Year 10 times.
Ten.
With the publication of Missing Links, Rick proved that he could hold our attention for longer than a page.
That was me. I wrote that.
All of his books have been critically acclaimed, and the last two have been New York Times bestsellers. We're delighted to see that today marks the release of Rick Riley's fifth book. Would you please join me in congratulating Rick in the publication of Shanks for Nothing?
I wrote 10. You only got me for 5 books? I wrote 10 books. Where's the other 5? You're mean. Well, thank you. This is kind of an MCI friends and family crowd, so thank you. Very kind to come. Okay, I get it now. Break a leg before a big event is just a metaphor. It's not a real instruction. So, I hurt this play. I ripped my Achilles playing basketball with my son Saturday in Santa Barbara. And they're all 21-year-olds, and they're fine. And I was, And they're like, and I'm laying there writhing on the ground, and one kid said, "Yeah, but think of all the girls you'll get." Oh, yeah, right, in the hospital. I just jumped too high. I caught it on the rim. These things happen. What are you going to do, you know? So, I don't know. And people say, "Oh, this is going to ruin your golf game." Yes, but it'll make my Parcheesi game much, much better. I'm going to be so freaking good at Parcheesi. Anyway, so these guys are all coming up to me. "Oh, you'll never be the same. Oh, your leg will wither. Oh, it'll be a year before you can do anything again. And it's awful. Could you just leave? Go away." So anyway, thank you for coming. I usually stand and run around the stage and do acrobatics, but we won't do that tonight. A bunch of my family and friends are here, and it's great, and I was just going to introduce some of my brother, my sister, my other sister, my nephew, my niece, my brother-in-law, my daughter. Stand up, Ray Ray. And, my cabbie, Big Tony's here. My exchange daughter from Seoul, Korea is here, Se-young. Se-young. And there's probably more family members I'm missing. Am I? Brother? Did I get everybody? Oh, poor niece. The niece's husband. Well, anyway. My two boys are not here. And when we first got Say Young, our exchange student, my son, Jake, who's probably the laziest guy ever to live, he's 19. And one day this summer before he went off to Wisconsin to be the number one party school in America, he's proud to point out. I said, "Jake, what the hell? You know, you're supposed to clean up your room. You still haven't cleaned up those dishes. And that mess in the family room, you've got to pick that up before you can go out tonight." And he goes, "Dad, what's an exchange student for?" It's not my joke, it's his joke. So we told him, didn't we? Well, you do all that, and now you go clean up Say's room. But it's been great having you here, and she's a lot of fun. And today I took her around to some of the TV shows, and she got to meet Kathy Sabin and all kinds of things. So it was fun. But Ray is my last one living at home. And things have changed. Like, I could kind of tell things have, she sort of got away from the sports world. In seventh grade, I started coaching her basketball team in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade. And when I coached her basketball team in seventh grade, it was at British Primary, you know. And they had this rule where every child had to play one sport. Every kid had to play one sport a year. So they, about 10 or 11 girls came out for basketball, and only about two of them really wanted to play. They were kind of like, all right. So I remember coaching one day, and I turned to put in some of my subs, you know? And I look back, and there's nobody there but this little, tiny, skinny girl with rectangular blue glasses, and she was sucking on a lollipop. And I'm like, where's everybody else? And she, Amber got kicked out of her clique, and she's in the bathroom crying. I'm like, well, where's the other five? Oh, you know, they had to go in and help her cry. And I'm like, what is there, a seventh grade girl gravitational pull into the... And I said, well, get in there, you know, so she got in there, and we lost that game, as we lost almost every game. And then one time I turned around, and again, nobody there. I'm trying to put in my best player. I'm like, what was our best player's name, Ray? The big center. No, it was the other girl. Aline. Where's Aline? I got to put Aline in. We're getting killed underneath. And Aline got her period, and she's in the bathroom crying. Where's everybody else? I know. They went in with her. Ah, great. I'm like, I don't think Phil Jackson has to put up with this stuff. You know what I mean? So I said, get in there, you know, and she throws it, and she gets in there, and sure enough, she makes the greatest pick I've ever seen, makes the most beautiful pick. Her man slides right, her teammate slides right by me, throw a backdoor pass, make a layup, win our only game of the year, one game out of 15. And I hold her up, I'm like, that was the greatest pick ever. And she goes, what's a pick? So, I don't know how I got on that story, but anyway, so it's nice. That, and Ray is now a big music star, so she doesn't care about basketball, but you were good. Anyway, then I've had some requests tonight to do the Jeremy Bloom introduction, which some people didn't hear. In fact, most of the world didn't hear for good reason, but I introduced Jeremy Bloom, the great Colorado football player, skier, at the Colorado Sports Hall of Fame dinner. And people had been very respectful and straightforward in introducing people. And I got up, and so I got up and I said, I'm Rick Riley. I'm here to introduce Jeremy Bloom. I said, I am so sick to death of Jeremy Bloom. I'm Jeremy. I don't know what to do. Should I be a pro skier or should I be a pro football player? Or maybe I should be a professional model and sleep with supermodels and make millions and travel the world. Life is so unfair. I'm like, Jeremy, I don't want to hear about your choices, you know, football or skiing. At this point, you don't want to hear my choices, Jeremy? I got Propecia or Hair Club for Men. All right? I'm just sick of it. I don't want to hear it, you know. I'm Jeremy. You want to touch my abs? You want to I can crunch coconuts with my thighs. Did you see me on Jay Leno? I was heli skiing in Chile when they called, but you know, everybody has to make sacrifices. I'm like, I don't want to hear about, he was there with this incredible looking woman. And I'm like, you know, you're 23 years old, you look like that. I went to see you. I was so skinny, you could fax me places, all right? there were three things you could see from the moon. The Houston Astrodome, the Great Wall of China, and my braces, all right? I got fewer women at CU than Richard Simmons. I don't want to hear about it. You know, we're getting booze. So I'm just like, you know, so just come up here with your perfectly tousled hair and your 1,000 times photographed butt and get your 9 millionth award, which I'm sure you'll melt down into bouillon and present to orphan nuns in Tibet while doing a triple heli iron cross shirtless, you know? Congratulations. That's what I said. Oh. I have no idea why they picked me to introduce Jeremy Bloom. Oh, and then what Bloom said, I forgot the kicker. Bloom comes up and Coach Gary Barnett's in the back of the room, you know. Must be, I don't know, 600-700 people there. And he comes to the microphone and says, "You're right, Coach Barnett, he is a schmuck." Which I thought was a pretty good line. It was pretty good. But I don't know what Barnett was doing there, but he was there. But anyway, I think he was there for Bloom, not me. So I have no idea why they had me introduce Bloom, but I don't understand a lot of things about this. My friends in the back call me Celebrity Light, One Cal Celeb. You know, I'm just slightly famous enough for people to go, "Was I in camp with you?" I get that a lot. Or, "Did you date my sister?" So I'm One Cal Celebrity Light. But anyway, so Oprah, I was on Oprah. And I think they confused me with Pat Riley. I have no idea why I was asked to be on Oprah. But I went on Oprah. And it was me, Jay Leno, and the singer, Brian McKnight. Cool guy, totally cool guy. And we're backstage, and I'd never been on Oprah. I guess those guys had. And the subject of the show was, why do men do that? Why do men do that? And now we three schmucks, we're going to have to answer for this ridiculous gender called men. And so as we're going out there and being introduced and coming out to the little stools, I realize it's all women. Like 250 women, and they're like, and I'm like, "Oh no!" And do you remember the scene from Hitchcock's The Birds? You remember this, where there's just 100,000 birds, and Rod Taylor's like sneaking through. And she's like doing this joke already. She's sneaking through the plaza, and there's 100,000 birds ready to like tear his pancreas out. That's exactly how it was that day going on Oprah. They're like, "Why do men do that?" And so right away, Oprah's like, "Who has questions?" You know, and I'm like, "Oh God!" And they said, "Well, why do men go to strip shows?" And I said, "I go just to see the new line of fall shoes." Why don't men cuddle after sex? And I said, "It's too hot. Can't you understand? It's too hot. Couldn't we just cross pinky toes or something? It's too hot." And then the last one that got me roundly booed, as if those two didn't, was, "What do men think about after sex?" And I said, "Think about? Think about." And that totally stumped me. And I'm like, "Think about." And I said, "I don't know. What do women think about?" And she goes, "Oh, well, sometimes we think about what our kids would look like." And we're like backing towards the wall. And I usually think about, is Subway still open this late? What do we think about? God. I'm almost sure this book isn't going to be on Oprah's best of, you know. For one thing, it might be. It's full of lies. I don't know. Oh, more booing. Again with the booing. Oh, like it's my fault. The guy wrote a piece of fiction and decided, well, hell, no one's noticing it. I'll tell people it's nonfiction. Maybe he just totally lied. So anyway, so I'm not going to be on Oprah with this book, but This is the sequel to a book I did called Missing Links 10 years ago. And Missing Links was based on this week I spent at the worst golf course in America called Ponkapog. And I had so much frickin' fun. I mean, it was just it's terrible. You had to hit it in the rough just to find grass because the fairways were not fair. And you didn't want to hit it in the sand bunkers because there was no sand in there. And the guy that cuts the holes was always drunk, so he pulled out the holes, so it was always like a little volcano, you know. So you had to learn to hit that and your ball go over that, you know. And guys were just saying things as you're about to hit. "Am I safe back here? Yeah, you're safe. Shut up, you know. And we'd always play sixsums and sevensums. And I remember, this guy who kept all the score, keeping everybody's bets. You know, he had Nassau's and Presses and this and that. And this guy, we're playing sevensome one day. And off we went down the fairway. He's keeping trying to hold. Now, you had two and you had three. You're giving him five aside. And you're for $20 and you're 50, right? And we can't find his ball. And we're like, where the hell's your ball? Still on the tee. He forgot to tee off. So anyway, about these four hilarious guys that played this terrible course. And then 3 weeks later, I covered the U.S. Open at the Country Club in Boston, which is so snooty, and it put the SOB in snob, really. And these guys were really snobby and snooty, but it was gorgeous. So I thought, what if we put the two courses right next to each other? So the first book, Missing Links, was the bet that the four guys make to see who can be the first to play the nice course, right? $1,000 bet. Well, so that went over. It's still selling, right? Charles? Where's Charles? Still sells. And so right away, more and more hilarious things kept happening. And I'll introduce some of the people who are in this book. But so I kept writing them down. And pretty soon I had a plot. That was about 8 years ago. And then I just kept adding plots. And now I have 9 plots in this book, which I admit I probably should have stopped plotting like 4 years ago. But I didn't. I just kept going. Plots, plots, plots. It's like Love Actually. Did you ever see that? It's Golf Actually. It's 9 plots, and it's all over the map. And but it's fun, and the idea is we're still right next to the nice course, but the crappy course guy wants to sell and join a nudist colony, and so he's selling out. And the nice course wants to buy the course and pave it for parking. Well, this is the only life these guys have. This is their family. You know, this is their all they know. They're all sort of out of round. You know, they should have been taken out of play years ago, most of these guys. But they're still playing, and this is their one place where they love. And so they got to come up with $250,000 to try to buy the course. And so therein lies the main plot. And I'm not going to go through all the other plots. Hopefully you'll stick with it. But that's so I've been working on this about 9 years. So I want to just tell you that some of the people that are this book is centered around are here. My brother John and his crazy friends, the Goons, which play at a course called Lake Valley. We call it Snake Valley. And a lot of their ridiculousness that happens. And then things that have happened at City Park. And then a lot of my buddies in here, Shark and Skybox, and of course the inimitable Two Down. Two Down, can you say hello to the people? Do you do appearances or is it extra? Thank you. Two Down. Two Down actually exists. And I'll read you the foreword to the book if I can find it. For Two Down O'Connor, who has to be toned down for fiction. Because he's just that bizarre. So I was going to read a little introduction here of the Two Down, who isn't exactly like you, Two Down, but he's quite close, and I hope you can put up with just a little reading about Two Down. Second, there was Two Down, who had never before slowed down in his life long enough to be morose. I don't think I put this in there, but we call Two Down half man, half cappuccino. For Leonard Petrovitz, that's your name in here, Two Down. For Leonard Petrovitz, life was an all-you-can-eat buffet, timed. This is a man who, when attempting a long putt, would send it on its way and then chase after it, hollering, 11 o'clock news, just before it dropped in. He was Walter Mitty in golf spikes. His self-image was along the lines of Ernie Els. He'd go to Richmond's big and tall shop, pick something out, and go, this is perfect. Just take about 8 inches off the sleeves, and I'll pick it up Thursday. Two Down believed life was his oyster, and he swallowed it meat, pearl, and tablecloth. He liked to come barreling into the clubhouse after winning piles of stackable jing, that's what we called money, and holler, stop your crying, Two Down's buying. And after a monstrously big win, he'd yelp, stop your bitching, Two Down's opening the kitchen. Which is actually what people, didn't you yell that once at Columbine? And you can call Two Down any of his 27 certified and approved nicknames that come on the back of his business card. But only one of those 27 cards, right? 27 names, yes. All right. So this book came out today. And my big competition is John Daly, whose book also came out today. And I've read the book. And it has even more swear words than mine. And it's kind of wild. I don't know if you read this, but He says in there that he lost $60 million in gambling over the last 12 years, which I can believe because when I caddied for him for this book, Who's Your Caddy, you know, he's like the center. He should be the centerfold of psychology today. He's addicted to everything. You know what I mean? He's addicted to alcohol, as we all know. He's totally addicted to gambling. He got addicted to tranquilizers. He's addicted to red meat. He's addicted to chocolate. He's addicted to cigarettes. He's addicted to wives. He's Diet Cokes. He had 22 Diet Cokes in the 24-hour period. I counted once. And so I asked him once as we were trundling along in this, he was hungover and I was hungover, and I'm like, so you're not doing so great on the alcohol. How are you doing on the gambling? And he said, oh, I think I got the gambling beat. And I said, oh, what have you done? He said, I don't do anything hard now. I just play the $500 slots. Well, I'm not sure that's beat. But he said, yeah, I can get two $500 slot machines right in front of me. I can pull twice every 30 seconds. And, you know, I can win or lose 600 grand in a night. Like, this again, your definition of beat, not quite right. So, you know, Daly is, I don't even want to tell you. I think I told all the stories about him and why he calls himself Long John Daly, but that's a whole nother. There's a character in here called Sponge, and he's a Scottish caddy. He's 6'8". Everything about him is red. Red hair, red freckles. And it's just an amalgam of every Scottish caddy I have. And I love caddies. I love telling caddy stories, especially Scottish caddy stories. And one of my favorite happened to a friend of mine, Bob Manning, who was playing at St. Andrews one day. And he was on the 11th hole, and he had four-putted one hole, because they're huge greens. He had four-putted one hole and three-putted five other greens. And so he gets the 11th hole, and he three-putts it. And it just freaks him out. He just blows a gasket. He just goes triple OJ. He loses it. Snaps his putter. He's just, and he just can't get over it. And he goes, I hate to three-putt. I freaking hate to three-putt. I would rather go back to my room right now and find my wife in bed with another man than three-putt another hole today. And there's a silence. And then we hear one of the caddies in the back go, what's your room number? I love that story. I love that story. And it has the added advantage of being true. I was going to tell one other story about the Who's Your Caddy book. And, you know, I caddied for Donald Trump. Carried his bag. Another guy carried his hair. But that's a whole other... But, I'm caddying. I meet Donald Trump. And I'm in his office at the top of the Trump Tower, whatever it is. And it's the first time I ever met him. And he's filming a McDonald's commercial. And he comes over and shakes hands. And he sort of knew me or whatever. And I said, hey, how much are you getting for the McDonald's commercial? And he goes, $1 million bucks. And $1 million more if it goes more than 30 days or something like that. And I'm like, cool. And he goes, but that's not the cool thing. And I said, well, what's the cool thing? Because with Trump, you know, it's always about Trump. You know, this is... We hired the best burger chef in Italy, and we got the best sand from Iraq, and I don't know, everything's this, the best. He says, I have this thing, and only 9 other people have it. He says, and he pulls out this little white card, and it says, on the card it says, bear can eat free at any McDonald's in the world. And he goes, and this is a few years ago, only Michael Jordan, Mother Teresa, and the Pope have it, or something like that, you know, some incredible lie that he tells, you know. And I was thinking about that later, you know. What the hell is he going to do with this? You know, you're Donald Trump. And I'm like, you know, you're at the Tiananmen Square McDonald's in Beijing, right? And you're behind Donald Trump in line. Hey, work with me, right? So you're behind Donald Trump in line. And he gets to the front and he goes, I'll have a Happy Meal and a chocolate shake and an apple pie. And the little guy says, that'll be 40,000 won or whatever it is. And he goes, not so fast, Hopsing. I don't know. What the hell is he going to do with that card? I don't know. I don't get it. Anyway, why I told that story, I don't know. But I was just going to read a little description of this guy, Sponge. And Sponge takes out Raymond Hart. See, Ray has to go over to Scotland to qualify for the British. His father has just died, and in the will, it says if he qualifies for any major, he gets $300,000. His father's kind of a prick. If he qualifies for any major, he gets $300,000 from his father. If he doesn't, he doesn't get anything. His father always felt like he didn't try hard enough with his golf career. So he says, okay. So Raymond says, okay, I'm going to try to qualify for the British Open. It's his last chance, right? So there's a rain delay, and a rainy day, and he's not going to play all day. And so he takes Sponge out to try to have Sponge teach him everything he can quickly about Scottish golf. Take me somewhere, I said. Teach me everything you know about golf. They'll never play today. This is the break I've needed. Tell me everything. And so we did. We went to a linksy little course called King's Meadow, and we played 36 in the pouring rain. Not a soul out there but us. And I learned more from Sponge in that one day than I learned from anybody since Uncle Joe under the old willow tree. That was the guy who taught him golf. He taught me the Musselboro skitter, which is a half-top 7-iron that runs along the ground. Like a short-legged weasel, Sponge said. He taught me to putt from 50 yards off the green. I learned that Sponge can read greens like a Rothschild reads stock reports. We were over a 10-foot putt when Sponge said, "Aye, this one here is a Lance Armstrong. One ball out." I learned that a Callista Flockhart was a shot that was thin but still pretty. Not to be confused with a Kate Winslet. Fat but otherwise perfect. A Joan Rivers was thin and scary. A wicked slice was a Lorena Bobbitt. It's not me, it's Sponge. That's right. A shot hit fat and left was Michael Moore. Fat and right was Rush Limbaugh. A putt that lipped out was Steven Tyler. One time I hit a 20-footer that stopped an inch short of going in, and Sponge said, "And sadly, that's a Nelson Rockefeller left dead in the hole." Hey, you're not going to like caddies if you don't like these things. Tudon was my caddy once at Pebble Beach. I played in the one and only time I played in the Pebble Beach Classic. And Tudon, like it would rain and he would hold the umbrella just over himself. You remember this? And I remember the 10th hole, I was very nervous, first day we played. First day, we'd practiced for 3 days, and now we're on the 10th hole. We started on the 10th. And I hit two way into the, I mean, way over. But one wins the beach for sure. One was kind of down the cliff, and probably, I wasn't going to be able to play it. And so I said, two. And so I started to walk towards my third shot. And I go, two, aren't you going to get those? He goes, they just gave you a whole box. That's why you didn't get much of a tip. So Tudon actually exists. He was actually my caddy. There's a lot of betting stories in this book because I love to bet, and I don't bet the way Tudon bets. He's the world's most avid golf gambler, but I have one story about Tudon. I think it was at a City Park. I can't remember. I think he was $800 down to a guy, and they got out to that hole right there on the corner, and it was kind of late in the day, and he owed this guy $500, and suddenly a kid jumped out of the bushes and said, "Hand me all your frickin' money right now or I'm blow a hole in you." And Tudon goes, "Just one second." He gets out his wallet. He takes out 500, hands it to the guy, says, "We're even." Which I thought was very ingenious. So I was just going to tell you read to you a quick betting sequence in regard to Tudon, who's in the book. And a little bet we made. Okay, I made a bet. This is Raymond talking to Tudon. Here's the bet, right? He's talking to Tudon. I tend to swing 75% with my driver. I think I can be 3 highway exits past you if I want to. In fact, I'll bet you $200 you can't knock it past my drive from this tee box in 2 shots. Frankly, I think you'll choke like Mama Cass. Well, this got Tudon's famous ADD eyebrows to itching. Do it. And $200 was a lot for a guy who was working as a clubhouse assistant at America's only all-women's golf club. 2 shots, he said? Yes, I said, 2 shots. Who goes first? I said, well, it's your honor. We stand on tradition. You go first. Two shots, right? He said, yeah, two shots. You're going to hit your ball, and I'm going to hit my ball, and neither of us gets to hit another guy's ball, right? He was very suspicious. Right. Cementhead, our third partner, was starting to get annoyed. Damn you guys, people have circumcised the globe faster than this. We both looked at him. Circumnavigated the globe? Yeah, okay, yeah, circumnavigated. Two down was back in my face. Now you're talking about golf balls, right? Not any kind of other ball, not nads, not anything else. Here at Ponky today, right today? Yes, precisely, I said. And if I can get past your single shot in my two shots, you will pay me $200 U.S. legal tender stacking jing today back in the clubhouse, right? Right. Bank, said two down. That's what we always say when we banked a bet. Bank. So this set off much whooping and taunting and side betting among the other three members of the fivesome, as is custom. Then two down stepped his wiry little Polish ass up to the ball and put his usual unfilmable quick slash on the ball, which produced his usual 190 yard long, 2 feet high, bunny scorching line drive that could go under a 1977 Datsun. I see you've gone to a higher lofted driver, I said. Blow me, he said. So I teed my ball up nice and high and began to waggle the driver. I waggled and exhaled and waggled some more. Then I stepped away, pretending to reassess my shot. Then I went around to the other side of the ball and began waggling the club again, only in the complete wrong direction. Cementhead said, the hole's the other way, Ray. I said nothing. I just drew it back and slapped the dimples off it about 300 yards back up and over the tee tracks, over the group putting out on 17, over the 14-foot high hedge separating us from the Mayflower Club, and God knows where from there, perhaps into the matching Louis Vuitton purse of Mrs. Carter Annuity III, playing in the ladies' C-team nine-hole golf and tee cozy group, approximately 490 yards away from two downs. Oh, shit, that hurt. People are laughing at my pain. That's lovely. Approximately 490 yards away from two down's ball. I looked at two down. He was struck mute. The blood abandoned his face. He looked like a man who'd just been stabbed in the foot with an ice pick. Danny was laughing so hard she was bent over the ball washer crying. Hoover was smiling. Cementhead was befuddled. Damn, Ray. How's he going to catch up to that in only one more shot? I tried to explain it to him. And he said, explain it to me all. And I said, okay, Cementhead, shall we start with the alphabet? So I hope you like this book. It's my marketing campaign for the book is it's the eighth in the Harry Potter series. So, and you don't have to buy it. You don't have to buy it. Just go to your local Barnes & Noble, your Borders, here at Tattered Cover. Take it wherever it is. And do what I do, which is always put it in the number 2 New York Times bestseller slot. Thank you so much. If you have questions, you want to do... Thank you. Thank you. Do you want to do some questions? Excuse me, or do you want to sign, or what do you want to do? A couple questions? Yes. No, hell no. I'm going to ride this thing till my kids are out of college. Are you kidding? Is that off the table? No. And I hope, and we've had some offers now for both books to be one movie, but I've heard that before. Believe me, we've been hearing this. It became a sitcom for a while in L.A. I got out there, and the guy wanted no part of me that was writing it. And I kept going. It was weird. I got to the set, and all this stuff I just dreamed up in my mind was actually sitting in front of me. Like it was like the size of a half a football field. Like there was the buried 57 Chevy that I just dreamed up, you know? And there was the counter with the fried egg sandwiches. It was great. And the guy wanted no part of me. So I remember I got a great column that week because that was right when O.J. had been kicked out of his two clubs. And I went out to Rancho Park in L.A. just to see if he might be out there. And I remember I walked because, you know, I know he loved golf. And I went out there and I said to this old greenskeeper, I said, any chance O.J.'s out here today? He said, yeah, he's looking for clues on 8. And anyway, so I waited for him on 9, and he let me play. He only had 3 guys, and he was perfectly nice. And he said, no incident questions, nothing about the incident, just golf questions. I said, okay, just golf questions. And I wanted to say, has your backswing changed at all since you killed those people? Or is that wrong? Is that wrong? I'm sorry. Yes. This is the one man who's actually reading Riffs of Riley. Well, you don't actually read it. You go on SI.com on Thursdays, or if you have a Verizon VCast phone, you can get it Wednesdays. But anyway, you click on it, and there's me, and streaming video and pictures, and I just riff on sports for 2 minutes, like 10 different topics. And I far favor the devil. He's talking about this ad they've been running every week where it's me, and there's a devil on one shoulder and an angel, and I'm both of them. And I far favor the devil, although I think I got off a pretty good line the other day. I was interested in Tiger Woods bungee jumping. Would you see that with his caddy?
Yeah.
And he bungee jumped with his caddy, and I said, allegedly, just before they jumped, Tiger turned to his caddy, Stevie Williams, and said, are you sure about this yardage? So thank you, sir, for mentioning my riffs of Riley. Anyone else? Yes. Not in the way that Dusty Saunders wrote about it. I was talking to Dusty, a media columnist for the Rocky Mountain News, and he goes, what's all this about you doing essays on CBS Sunday Morning? And I said, well, you know, one of my little secret goals in life is to replace Andy Rooney if he ever quits, which may be never. And so I'm starting to try to do things on CBS, hoping that maybe someday they'll notice, you know? And so Dusty writes, there's talk that Rick Riley will replace Andy Rooney on 60 Minutes. I'm like, yeah, between you and me, Dusty, we talked about it. So now I'm getting all these calls. Is that true? And I'm like, oh, there's talk. But anyway, what the hell did you ask me? Oh, yeah. But this Sunday, so I spent an hour with Morley Safer in Miami, and he interviewed me all about John Daly, and I told all my John Daly stories, and so, I don't know, there he goes. Why I'm promoting someone else's book? Again, this is why you never get your marketing degree from Colorado. Stupid. I keep forgetting about this frickin' foot. It doesn't hurt until you jam it down. For the podcast people, I have a Achilles. You're going to tell them that?
Yeah.
Okay. I have a severed Achilles, and I'm stupid enough to be here tonight. No. I keep banging it down. You'll put it in there. Okay. Yes. Beirut, yeah. I'm sorry if I pissed him off, but have you met my bodyguard? I ain't scared of no Mike Golick. No, I'm like 6 foot, 185, something like that. Very odd question, sir. Very odd. My Craig Andreessen's back there. He can tell you my inseam, and that's perfectly honest. There's nothing weird going on. He just knows it. How about in the back? Any questions in the back? No, you people are all... Yes. No, but I'm hopped up on some crap Barry gave me tonight. It's fantastic. No, but it is a work of fiction. That's kind of... As are Barry's numbers. I just like to say that. We have Barry Bonds fans, too. What the hell is this? I thought you guys were Rockies fans. No, I mean, Barry, come on. I mean, anybody that says, oh, I thought I had gained 35 pounds of muscle in 4 months because of this arthritic rub my trainer was giving me. Oh, yeah, Barry. That's why when I go to visit my dad at the assisted living home, all the residents are out there bench pressing their Buicks. Sure. I believe that. Anybody else? You had one. Yes. That is a true story. That is a true story about, and we called him out in L.A., we called him Dom, the world's most sexual man. And that was when I was at the L.A. Times. And he was just the world's most sexual man. And I guess I'll tell this story. This is a true story. One time, Dom, you know, no matter what, he had to have a conquest every night he went out. And so one day we're playing basketball with him. And of course, we always ask, Dom, how'd it go last night? And he said, You know, it got about 2 o'clock, and, you know, I went home with this fat chick. I'm like, well, oh, okay. And he goes, but she lived on a boat. We're like, she lived on a boat? Yeah, she lived on a houseboat. And I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of interesting. So what happened? He goes, well, afterwards, I kind of snuck out of there. But before I left the dock area, I untied the boat and pushed it out. I swear, this is a true story. And we're like, and he's like, what? And we're like, you pushed the boat out to sea while she was sleeping? And he goes, I said she was fat. This is what the man was like. It's not me. It's Dom. But then a friend of mine here in town, it's half Dom in California. And my friend in town, who is not at all like Dom, except that he has more words for every sex act, whatever, body part. He's never used the same one twice, and I've known him 15 years. I don't want to introduce him, but we call him Skybox. And you know, he's kind of the Websters of smut. And so I swear, most of the ridiculous words that Dom uses in the book are from him. But the man's character and morality, which is just slightly beneath slugs, is from this guy in California. Ooh, that brought things to a halt. Anyone else? Yes, yes. Oh, here we go. I'll never forget it. It's 1986. All my family knows this story. Or maybe it's 87. I just come out with this book. Charles, I've written 10 books. The first 5 were as told to's. And one of them was this Brian Bosworth character that was the linebacker for the Oklahoma Sooners. And so I was at Sports Illustrated. I thought I was way over my head. I was drinking 10 cups of coffee a day, 20 aspirins. I was starting to form ulcers. This book comes out that I wrote in which he just totally creams the Oklahoma, and he talks about guys shooting machine guns in the dorm and awful things that went on and steroid use and all this stuff. So now I'm sitting in my living room in Littleton, Colorado. I live now in Cherry Creek, but Littleton, Colorado. And to try to get rid of these ulcers, I would do this thing called biofeedback. And when you do biofeedback, you take one breath every 30 seconds. So you go like this. You go like this. Ma'am, can I tell the story first? So you go like this. One breath every 30 seconds. You go. And they want you to do this. They want you to do all the body parts exactly like I'm doing it. The last little bit, you're supposed to spit out the last. So anyway, all my softball buddies know this story too. So I got the IFB in. I got ESPN in my living room. They're going to go live with me in 2 minutes. The guy says, we got 2 minutes. Just relax. And my stomach is on fire. So I go, I'm gonna knock off a couple breaths here. I got 2 minutes. I can get in at least 2 breaths, maybe 3. So I do 2 perfect breaths, you know? And then all of a sudden, my wife comes running in, my ex-wife now, but my wife, and she goes, you're on TV, you idiot! What are you doing? And I go, oh. So apparently, Chris Berman, whoever it was, had said, and it turns out the IFB hadn't worked in any of our headsets, so we didn't know we were on live. So he had said, Rick Riley here with us now, and Rick, do you think this book on Brian Bosworth is an indictment of Oklahoma football or college football in general? And I go, but Chris Berman thinks I'm going to give the most contemplative answer in the history of broadcasting, right? He's like, oh, crap. What is this guy going to say? He's got to think this long about his answer? And they're just gripped, and we're all just... And apparently for 30 seconds, they're just... And they're waiting for me to speak, and I go... And so he cut away, and he goes, well, we know he's alive. We can hear him breathing. So thank you, sir, for putting lemon juice in the cut. No, it was live. Anybody else, or should we stop at that? I think we should stop at that. We'll start signing. Thank you so much. We're drinking beer at Wine Coop afterwards. If you want me to sign over there, you can drink beer, and I'll come there and sign. We can sign here, whatever. I'll sign Stephen King, John Grisham, whatever you like. Thank you so much.
That's all for tonight's Authors on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for Nando Parado, Augustine Burroughs, Madeline Albright, Elizabeth Strout, Elizabeth Berg, and many more as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on May 2nd, 2006.